Today, no free market capitalism here. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, the latest post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, three banks that became symbols of the worst excesses of free money, two crypto-eager banks, Silvergate Bank and Signature Bank, and the startup-centred bank Silicon Valley Bank, have all collapsed within a few days. There was initially a fear of contagion as confidence in the banking system wobbled, and share prices of many banks dropped significantly as a result of the failures. But now, of course, in a joint announcement by Yellen, Fed Chair Jerome Powell, and the FDIC Chairman Martin Grimberg, the bailout of unsecured depositors has arrived. So now all depositors of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, which was also shut down, will be made whole, not just insured depositors. And in addition, the banks that are still standing can borrow from the Fed under a new facility. But investors in failed banks are on their own. And some senior banking staff are likely to get the chop. Now, the statement said, after receiving a recommendation from the boards of the FDIC and the Federal Reserve, and consulting with the President, Secretary Yellen approved actions enabling the FDIC to complete its resolution of Silicon Valley Bank, Santa Clara, California, in a manner that fully protects all depositors. Depositors will have access to all of the money starting Monday, March the 13th. So it's worth looking at this process, in that the Fed, the same entity which has been reducing liquidity through quantitative tightening, will print the needed funds to cover the deposits and then give it to the FDIC, and the proceeds from asset sales will chip in to cover the losses later. No losses associated with the resolution of Silicon Valley Bank will be borne by the taxpayer, they said. And later the FDIC will charge other banks for those losses it incurred from bailing out uninsured depositors. And maybe the Fed will eventually get its money back from the FDIC, possibly. And the statement said, any losses to the deposit insurance fund to support uninsured depositors will be recovered by a special assessment on banks as required by law. So depositors of Signature Bank are also included in the bailout, as the joint statement by Yellen Powell and FDIC spelled out. We're also announcing a similar systemic risk exception for Signature Bank, New York. New York, which was closed today by its state chartering authority. All depositors of this institution will be made whole. As with the resolution of Silicon Valley Bank, no losses will be borne by the taxpayer. And the joint statement said, for both banks, shareholders and certain unsecured debt holders will not be protected. In other words, this time investors will lose their shirts. And we note that some, quite a few actually, piled into those banks when shares were considered a bargain. More importantly, though, was the separate statement from the Fed that said that the funding for other banks will be made available through the creation of a new bank term funding program, the BTFP, offering loans of up to 1 year in length to banks, saving associations, credit unions, and other eligible depository institutions. They have to pledge collateral in the form of treasuries, agency debt, mortgage-backed securities, and other qualifying assets. And the collateral will be valued at par instead of market value. Now, this is a very important departure because, of course, bonds have moved significantly and their prices have dropped substantially. And those losses would have to be recognised, but by at par rather than market value, effectively, they don't have to be. Now, the BTFP will be an additional source of liquidity against high-quality securities, eliminating institutions need to sell quickly those securities in times of stress. In other words, now banks no longer have to sell those assets to cover a deposit outflow and book a loss, but can borrow from the Fed against those assets as collateral at par value, With approval of the Treasury Secretary, the Department of Treasury will make available up to $25 billion from the Exchange Stabilization Fund as a backstop for the BTFP, the Fed said, adding that it does not anticipate that it will be necessary to draw on those backstop funds. And the expected conclusions in both the joint statement and the Fed statement comes with the term resilient, meaning that individual banks can collapse, but the banking system overall reigns supreme. In other words, the Fed has acted as a lender of last resort to ensure the system remains. Now, I suppose you could argue that the Fed has no more important duty than safeguarding the stability of the banking system. That's why it was created in the aftermath of the panic of 1907, when the US discovered that it was reliant on just one man, the original JP Morgan, to keep its monetary system functioning. And now, after all that, on March 13th, it was quite a day on the markets. As Bloomberg noted, it was the biggest one-day slump for the two-year Treasury yield at 61 basis points since 1982. The fall during the Black Monday crash of 1987 was 59 basis points. It was the biggest one-day drop in the two-year German Bund yield at 41 basis points since Bloomberg's data started in 1990. And it was the biggest one-day decline in the two-year Japanese government bond yield at 20 basis points since the Bank of Japan introduced yield curve control in 2016. And it was the sharpest steepening in the 2-10 yield curve at 48.2 basis points in the last 40 years, save only for September 11th, 2001, which was steepened by 50.6 basis points. And we all know why that happened. And only the third decline of more than 25% in a week for the KBW index of big US banks in 31 years. The only other instances were in the COVID lockdown and in the aftermath of the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. The KBW index erased all of its gains for the last 25 years, in fact, and it's now at the same level as it was on March the 11th, 1998. So all in all, the shock of a couple of bank failures has done the job which the Fed failed to do, making market conditions as tight as they ever were last year. And importantly, after SVB, the Fed is now expected to capitulate rather than lift rates again when they meet later in the month. That's a massive turnaround from when Fed Chair Jerome Powell just convinced everyone in his congressional testimony that he was ready to hike by 50 basis points at the Open Market Committee meeting next week. As far as the market is concerned, the problems for the banks have left the calculus for the Fed changed completely. They've also shifted expectations for the European Central Bank, which unluckily has a scheduled meeting on Thursday, and they're heavily pre-committed to a 50 basis point hike, and the overnight index swaps market seems just about convinced that the ECB will go through with that. However, expectations for continued hawkishness have been erased. And in Australia, the ASX 30-day has moved down significantly, suggesting a 3.5% top rate as opposed to above 4% just a few days back. The Fed should plainly try to limit the damage to the banking system, but also minimising the moral hazard it creates. And so far, this banking crisis has been treated as a liquidity issue, which can be countered by offering banks liquidity in return for their underwater bonds as collateral. That means that direct attempts to tighten the money in circulation or quantitative tightening is compromised, but it doesn't follow that rates also have to be cut. To quote Michael Howell of Cross Border Capital in London, central banks, in our view, are now operating bifurcated monetary policies that use higher interest rates to tackle the inflation bogey and employ their balance sheets to maintain financial stability. As we keep saying, QT is effectively dead in the US. This is evidenced by the latest Fed acronym, the BTFP, brought in to avoid further Silicon Valley Bank situations. And by the way, history tells us that cutting rates in response to a crisis does not always go well. If you go back to the meltdown of long-term capital management in the wake of Russia's default in 1998, the Fed controversially banged the heads of Wall Street bankers together to tide the stricken hedge fund through. And as credit markets were becalmed, the FOMC, under its then-chairman Alan Greenspan, made the fateful decision to announce an emergency intermeeting cut of 25 basis points. Now, it did succeed in reviving the credit markets, but as money is fungible, it'll find its way to where the most profits are available. And that emergency cut sparked the final insane burst of speculation in the Nasdaq, which would end with the bursting dot-com bubble some 18 months later. And by the way, we're still paying for that even now. And remember, inflation isn't beaten yet, and the Fed has its reputation to think of. Money continues to be fungible, and the stock market away from the banking sector has taken this incident in its stride. So premature easing could provoke another melt-up. And so to that end, the market pivot and lower bond rate expectation now might be reversed again if the Fed keeps rates tight. But meantime, once again, the financial system is saved from itself in the US, whereas in the UK, HSBC brought SVB's UK bank, while in Australia, crickets, as we deflect our attention to AUKUS and the $380 billion price ticket. But perhaps we also need unlimited underwriting of depositors' funds here. And maybe the RBA will launch a TFF version 2.0 to do just that. Well, we'll see. But don't think that this crisis is over. We are in the foothills only at the moment. And these things take time to play out. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.